Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All right, this one.
Here's John Williams.
This one might get me in trouble. First, hi. Hey, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And we're here all the way until 3 o'clock. That's weekdays on Saturdays, 10 a.m. until 12 noon. On all social media, I'm WGN King John. I want to be king someday, and I want it for you. Is it wrong to say to people whose houses are being bulldozed by a wall of lava, why are you living on a volcano anyway? I mean, is that just a little like, I don't know, mean?
But it's like, why do people live in California and there's earthquakes?
Yeah, I know that, but at least you didn't buy the house when the earth was shaking. It's an active volcano. It's a live volcano. So you can't go, holy cow, lava. No, that's what volcanoes do, right? So it just seems to me like, for instance, if you live in Kansas, I'm not going to blame you for getting hit by a tornado if you live in San Francisco. If you live in Miami, it's a little bit more on you because you're in a hurricane zone and you're going to get hit by a hurricane. Or, you know, in South Texas,
right,
whatever.
Or you live in Malibu and your house could just slide down because of a mudslide.
More like that, right?
Yeah.
I know. So there's certain risks that I think we all take. And some of it is a reasonable risk and we don't blame you. You couldn't have known. But if you live in a flood zone along the Fox River, and every year the Fox River floods, I know that's terrible for you and you love the Fox River Valley and all of that jazz, but you're living in a flood zone.
Do they have volcano insurance?
They have to have some higher insurance if you live on a volcano.
Yeah, it's $1 million, okay? Elif, see if there's such a thing as volcano insurance for Hawaii. Volcano insurance, because it's a terrible thing, and I'm sorry for the people. Nobody's died. Nobody's gotten injured. Several dozen homes have been wiped out, but that's about it. And you live on a volcano.
But even when they say it's active, you're like, is it?
I know. Why? Right. So what is your definition of active?
Because that thing's been smoking. What are my chances? It's Hawaii.
Well, this one's pretty obvious.
Well,
There's lava flowing on the highway.
I know that. So imagine like the guy whose house didn't get hit by lava, but he happened to have it on the market this week. I'll bet that's a tough sell. So it's got 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, central air. It's included in the cable. The cable's included. We just threw in the cable for a year. And there's a volcano. I mean, it's just, you know, I just think that's a tough sell. Here's a fun fact about magma. The center of the Earth is the same temperature as the surface of the sun. How about them apples? The center of the Earth is the same temperature as the surface of the sun. And the core of the Earth, and we're looking at around 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, the core of the Earth in the history of the Earth is believed to have only cooled by maybe 200 degrees. It's like, hey, we've been around a while. I'm sure it'll be cooling off. We'll be good. Actually, we're not. The pressure's so great, and I don't know what's going on in there. But anyway, the Earth's core temperature is believed to have only dropped by maybe 200 degrees over the history of the planet's life. And it's like the surface of the sun. And if you're living on a mountain and the surface of the sun, the core of the Earth comes gurgling up now and then, that's on you. That's on you.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing, Elif, is there such a thing as volcano insurance?
Because the community sits in a zone deemed by the U.S. Geological Survey to have a high risk of lava, few insurance companies will issue policies there.
Got that right. I'll tell you what.
I can barely get car insurance.
Hey, Allstate, if you're listening, I don't want to be on your team if you're going to start writing volcano insurance, okay? Because we're all paying for that. Why don't we just, when they buy the house, why don't we just give them another one? Go, look, well, let's just cut through the red tape. Here's your house. Here's the other house you're going to have when this one gets run over. All right. This is Aaron Schlossberg. You don't know who he is, but I guess you're about to find out if you haven't already. That is, he's only recently come to national attention. He is an attorney. He's in Manhattan. He's at a restaurant called Fresh. There's a bunch of people in the lunchtime crush, and they're getting their lunch. and the staff is speaking Spanish, not only to themselves, but it sounds like maybe to some of the customers. He resents that and goes off on a tirade at the store manager, who's called to sort of deal with this guy. Naturally, people take out their phones and start recording.
So your staff is speaking Spanish to customers when they should be speaking.
Very violent. I mean, sometimes they do.
He's spoken. She's speaking it. It's America.
Because
I will be following up. And my guess is they're not documented. So my next call is to ICE to have each one of them kicked out of my country. If they have the balls to come here live off of my money, I pay for their welfare, I pay for their ability to be here. Maybe you shouldn't eat that sandwich today. Take a break from the food.
Maybe you should get hit by a car, you piece of...
So he got in a lot of punches there. It goes for about 90 seconds. We cut it down to about 30. And at the end, just to make sure he's a terrible person, he fat-shamed, I guess, the person that's doing the videotaping.
Okay, but the other person also said he should get run over by a car.
Well, maybe he should.
Yeah. That's pushing it.
He said, my guess is, and I don't know how good a radar you have for illegal aliens, I have a good radar for people who speak Spanish. I don't have a good radar for people who are speaking Spanish illegally, or illegally here speaking Spanish. I think we all make those assumptions, though, right? You've seen crews of workers. You've seen people cleaning hotel rooms. And you wonder, but I don't know, maybe they're probably more likely than not they are, in fact, U.S. citizens. There's probably a high percentage of them that aren't U.S. citizens. He said, my guess is they're here illegally, and they're living off of my money, and they should be speaking my language in our country, not Spanish.
Now, am I right or wrong? There is not a national language in the United States.
United States, there is not.
Okay.
Ella! Was there an official national language of the United States? I don't think there is.
No, there is not.
It's American, man. Why don't you speak American?
American English and English.
Seriously? Are you just making that up?
No, there's not a national...
I mean, I know we speak English, but I don't think that's the official national language of the United States. I'm pretty sure of that, for what that's worth.
Well, hold on.
Look it up. So
I did.
I think the national language is gossip.
It's Twitter. It's here's the deal. If I run a restaurant, here's how I run the restaurant. You should speak, if you can, to customers in the language they are most comfortable with. So if I'm working behind the counter or waiting a table and I speak Spanish and you are Spanish speaking, we should have this conversation in Spanish. If you're Spanish speaking and I don't speak Spanish, then I'll use English and you're going to have to try and speak English.
Just like when we're in Paris and it's gracious of the waiter to speak to us in English if we don't speak French.
You're not being sarcastic there.
No, right? It's the same thing. We would expect it when... We expect waiters to speak to us in English all over the world.
Yeah, we do.
So if a waiter here speaks Spanish and the clients are Spanish, why wouldn't you speak Spanish?
That makes sense, doesn't it? Now, if you are Spanish speaking, if that's your first language and you're at a restaurant and you're talking to yourselves, just amongst yourselves, I think you should speak amongst yourselves in English if you are around an audience of English-speaking customers.
I agree. And the reason is that with people's insecurity levels being across the board, all different, it's just the professional way to do things.
You ever had them look at you and then they all start giggling and chattering something in Spanish and you go, all right, what was that?
And you always think it must be about me.
I know. Well, insecurity is the word. But it's not even that. Maybe it's just rude. That's like carrying on a private conversation in front of these people that they can't be part of.
Or maybe they're saying, isn't this family sitting here that I'm serving a wonderful family?
Yeah. They may be saying that. But
you don't know that.
As a rule, if I was managing a restaurant, I would say, staff, in the kitchen, if you're amongst yourselves, you can speak whatever you want. But if you are engaging with or around predominantly English-speaking customers, I would prefer that you speak in English, even to yourselves. If you want to say, hey, Bob, will you get that table and I'll get that table, I think you should say that in English, even if you might be more fluent or proficient in your native tongue.
I think people should speak whatever language they can communicate with anyone in. So here's where...
Wait a minute. I don't even know what Violetta just said.
She wasn't speaking in a language we can communicate with.
I don't... So you're saying that they should only be speaking English?
If I pull up to a counter, say, and there's two registers working, and they both speak Spanish and I
but
don't...
But how do you determine that? Do you go, hello, and then...
I actually don't know how they do it, because there have been times where a person behind the register will look at another person standing next to me, and they'll immediately begin speaking Spanish, and I don't know how they both knew. Okay, but my point is, if you want to talk to a customer in Spanish and they're Spanish, fine. But if I'm standing, say I'm the only customer, I think you guys behind the counter should speak English around me. that's how I feel.
Right, and then you're at this fancy restaurant and they serve you the beef Wellington when you'd order the crab cakes, and they say, I'm sorry, we did it in English and we just don't speak that well.
We don't speak it that well. Listen, somebody said online today, okay, so suppose you go to a Chinese restaurant, because I think a lot of these conversations have a subtext, don't they? And it's not about language. If you go to a Chinese restaurant, do you expect the whole... Do people get irate when you hear Chinese in a Chinese restaurant? Do they get irate when they hear French in a French restaurant? What's the language spoken in your parents' restaurant, Violetta?
We speak a lot of languages there.
Okay, and
Spanish,
do people ever
Serbian,
complain
Romanian.
When they hear a lot of Serbian getting thrown around?
No, I think the only complaint that is valid is if you are trying to communicate with a server who does not understand you.
That happens a lot too, doesn't
which
it?
I can understand
and
that, but
that
this,
is frustrating.
This gentleman in the video or in the soundbite you played, I don't understand what he's upset about. He's upset that his server was speaking to him in Spanish? Or just
know.
At the table next to them in Spanish?
He said, these people are speaking Spanish, and that person's speaking Spanish, that person's speaking Spanish. All of your staff should be speaking English
around
here in America.
Me because around me, because
I'm an American.
I want to go back to something, John. You just said that it's not unusual or it happens a lot that a waiter doesn't understand you because of language.
Not as well as if I had spoken Spanish to them, Steve. That there is a bit of a language barrier. What do you think of that?
I can't remember it ever being a problem with me that a waitress or a waiter who's put to the tables... whose primary language is something else where they couldn't figure out what I wanted.
You're absolutely right, Steve. I don't think I characterized my thought about that correctly. There have been times, though, where I am working in a store, in a restaurant. Maybe somebody's come to the house, a crew of guys to do the roof, and there's a language barrier. But in a restaurant with a waiter, no, that does not happen that often. But in this case, I don't think that was the issue. I think the guy took offense to the staff all speaking Spanish, and this guy... is a nut. This attorney who goes off on this rant to everybody randomly is a nutcase.
But didn't you say that if you walked up to a counter, you wanted everyone to also be speaking English in
but
your
if
presence?
Okay, so that guy's a bad man. If I was running a restaurant, I would ask my staff to speak in English around a predominantly English-speaking customer base.
I don't think you should go to Little Booker as Bistro because my parents barely speak English. Okay. And I think that people come to our restaurant, though, for that authentic experience.
I almost think, Violetta, this whole conversation is more specifically about Spanish.
Sure.
And I think it's about Mexican Americans. And I think it's about illegal undocumented immigrants coming from Mexico. I think that's the subtext to this. I think that's where the hostility comes from.
My parents also speak Spanish, though, with the staff. We have a woman that's been with us for 25 years who speaks only Spanish.
So in another word, John, it's about bigotry.
I think this guy is that, yeah. I think this guy is that, yeah. But I'm just, I guess, I'm not championing bigotry. All I'm saying is I don't think I'm the first one to be a little uncomfortable in a community of people that are all speaking not English here in America around me as an American. Maybe it's not the restaurant. Maybe it's some other scene.
Well, let's go back to Paris. You're in a Parisian restaurant. Very nice, right? And the waiters and the bus people all around you are speaking French.
Yeah.
And you wonder then, too, like, oh, maybe they're talking about me as an American.
Okay, but I do not have an obligation.
But do you have that feeling?
Oh.
I mean, I have that. Maybe have that feeling sometimes.
Maybe a little bit.
At the nail salon, it happens a lot.
I hear that
it
does.
Coming up.
Okay.
But the point is, then, it's more about us than it is about them. It's about our sort of lack of security or insecurity that we just assume that people are ridiculing us. Right? Rather than the speakers. It's perfectly normal that French waiters would be speaking French in Paris, and so what's the harm in Spanish speaking, help speaking Spanish in the U.S.?
But also with that analogy, what if it was a bunch of Americans speaking English in Paris? Would the French be upset by that?
I don't know. I don't care. It's 1:22. Rob Martyr just walked in here. What's the matter?
A unique perspective on this conversation. I spent 10 years of my life in Montreal.
Yeah, right.
And as you know, English and French, two official languages of Canada, but moreover in Quebec, they're a bit more belligerent about it than the rest of the country.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. And they do have the language police in the province there to make sure that everyone's speaking French first. But I never had any problems in Montreal, at least.
I'm just imagining the scene. Let's take this ass of a customer out of the story.
Right.
If you are running a restaurant that you want to embrace the almighty dollar, you want to make the customers as happy as you can, don't you think that it would be better to have your staff speaking English around English-speaking customers than any other language?
Back in the day, there was a McDonald's in the South Loop, predominantly Hispanic kind of area at that time. They had the language in both English and Spanish.
Oh, on the menu?
On the menu, and English and Spanish-speaking staff, because that owner of that particular franchise did exactly what you said. I'm here to make money.
I want to make my customers
And everybody that was staff there, they were perfectly bilingual.
Yeah. So 1:24, lots of phone calls. Huh. You're on WGN. This is Norm. What can I do for you, Norm?
Buenos dias, Juan.
Fair enough.
Story is, my lovely blonde niece, Summers, between junior, senior in high school and freshman, sophomore, and junior in college, worked at a local pizza place as a waitress. All of the kitchen help were Hispanic. All of them were making comments in Spanish about how lovely she was. They didn't know she took 7 years of Spanish in school and understood every word they said.
you know, really, this problem goes away if Americans would just be a little broader in their language. You know, we should all be speaking Spanish anyway. If I get to be king, you will learn Spanish in grade school.
Well, she is now the principal of an elementary school, and 35% of her population is Hispanic.
That's interesting.
So she has no problem communicating with 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds.
Yeah. Interesting. Norm, thanks for the phone call.
Sure.
Appreciate you joining us. Bob, you're on WGN. Bob, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hello. Hello, John.
Hey.
So I've got an interesting story about flying. I'm a pilot, and I would do some international flying, and the official language of aviation is English.
Yeah.
But if I'm flying in Mexico, if I'm flying in Germany, China, Japan, the controllers will speak to me in English, but it's very common to have the other aircraft get spoken to in their native language. So as a pilot, we find it very helpful to eavesdrop on the conversations that are going on, because if someone's talking about turbulence or someone's talking about weather or someone's talking about something going on, we get a lot of situational awareness from that. But when we're flying internationally, there's an entire other conversation going on that we don't understand. And it would be nice if the official language happens to be English, that all communications would be done in English.
That's a really interesting observation. I think that's kind of akin to what I'm saying about the restaurant. I'm out of time, Bob. Thanks for flying. Thanks for calling. Steve, how many places can you think of in Illinois that begin with Lincoln or have Lincoln in them?
A lot.
Go.
Lincoln Way High School, Lincoln, Illinois, Lincoln School in Chicago.
Lincoln Park, Lincoln Square, Lincoln
Village.
Wood.
Lincoln Village.
There's Lincoln Park Village. Zoo.
Lincoln Park Zoo. Phil and I were talking about some restaurants. And
there's the Lincoln, what's the Lincoln Diner on Irving Park? Is that...
Don't know that. Yeah. I'm actually thinking of neighborhoods and towns that have the word Lincoln in it, besides
Lincolnshire.
Well, that's it. So Phil was telling me about a restaurant. Where was it? Was it in Lincolnshire?
Lincoln Wood.
It was in Lincoln Wood.
Very close.
There's always around the malls. That's how you can know these places, at least me.
Now, Lincoln Wood doesn't have a mall, so...
Yeah, it does.
It does?
Yeah, and McCormick and...
McCormick and something or another.
Yeah. Phil, don't
I'm
test
way behind
her.
On my shopping.
Do not
sorry.
Test her with the malls.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
You be the food expert. She'll be the
That's
shopping.
That's how I learned the roads, actually, if I was going to Woodfield or Old Orchard.
Well, so he was telling me about the restaurant in Lincoln Wood. And I thought, oh, well, that's not too far from where I live. No, that's Lincoln Park.
Lincoln Park.
Which,
if you're in Lincoln Park, Lincoln Wood's a bit out of your...
We'll hop in the car 5 minutes before our reservation. We won't be on time. Phil Vitella is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. He normally joins us Wednesdays. We asked him to come in today, Thursday. We really appreciate you saying hi. How are you, Phil?
I'm good, thank you.
Traveled to Bologna at Italy's latest pop-up. You just wrote a little blurb. Was this you or was that one of your colleagues?
No, I wrote that.
You looked at it twice like now.
I know, I have to look at my own bylines and I don't remember.
You wrote Via Bologna, a pop-up restaurant, and Enoteca?
Enoteca.
What's that?
Wine bar.
I'm going to cross that out right in wine.
Enoteca sounds so classy.
In English, please.
Yeah, we've already had that conversation.
Do I have to change it to Bologna Way then instead of Via Bologna?
Let me just finish the sentence you wrote. Debuted Friday at Italo on East Ohio. That's downtown here, featuring food, hands-on pasta demonstrations, and tasting of wine, balsamic vinegar, prosciutto, and cheese. So this is in Italy.
Yes, it's in one of the rooms in Italy on the second floor.
Yeah. So what did you think of the food? Have you tried it yet? Or you
They just started it last weekend.
How's the food and beverage in there generally at Italy?
Generally, it's terrific.
Really?
Yeah. And there's not a whole lot of formal seating and eating, but there are lots of little food stations. There's a pizza station. There's a sandwich station with the roast beef sandwich I'm in love with. And there are a couple of the places where you can just get gelato and lots of other places
and
like
wine.
That.
Yeah.
And wine.
And the wines are pretty good too, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's terrific stuff.
You're not a food snob, are you?
No, I don't think so.
I don't either. I think it would be easy to dismiss a Disneyland of Italian food, which is what I think Italy is. Now I sound like a snob,
depends on what you feel of Disney World.
Maybe it does, huh? And I'm like, oh, really? Is this real Italian? Is this real good Italian? It's got kind of this, you know, the glitz is maybe more important than the actual stuff. But you say it's pretty good there.
Yeah, I think the products they bring in are terrific. And I wish I could afford to buy all their stuff.
You also wrote in the Chicago Tribune about Phil Stefani. What are you saying about Stefani Prime?
Well, I made a joke that on two levels. Prime refers to the quality of the steaks there. But it's also like Phil Stefani's still in his prime. His first restaurant opened in, I want to say, 1980. And yet he's just opened this place, and it's contemporary, and it hits all its marks. And he's never changed his formula over the years. He does good quality steaks and seafood and Italian specialties. And he does that a lot, and he does it all the time. But he's been incredibly successful at it. He's got, I've lost track of how many restaurants he has. He has all the Tuscany restaurants. Tavern on Rush. He has Riva out there. He's a partner in the... the Broken English Taco places. His organization runs the Castaways Bar, which is up on North Beach.
Oh yeah, right. That's him. Really?
That's him too.
I have not been in there. What a great location! It looks fun. Is it any good?
I've never been in there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what's the specialty? What did you like at Stefani Prime? What should I order?
Well, if you really want to get into it, you get the tomahawk rib chop, which is $100, but it feeds too. It's this monster 36-ounce rib chop on the bone. They bring it to you on a cart, and it's just propped up, so it's very dramatic, and they slice it for you at the table, and and it's a delicious ribeye. I prefer the veal valdostana, which is a big veal chop with prosciutto and fontina cheese kind of broiled on top.
You wrote in your review about the staff there, too. You said, on my second visit, Sam the bartender remembered the cocktail I'd enjoyed more than a week earlier. My third, the hostess remembered where she'd seated me the previous times. Servers know the menu so thoroughly, in more detail than the menu provides, they seem almost disappointed when you don't ask questions. Was that because you're Phil Vitale, do you think? Or do you think everybody gets that treatment?
From what I can tell, everybody gets that treatment, but I'm always, my radar is always out for, are they being nice to me? I don't think Sam the bartender knew who I was or anything, and Sam the bartender laughed at my joke, so we had this instant rapport.
Best bartender ever.
Ever.
What did you order? What was the drink?
I've forgotten. I'll have to call Sam.
That's because you had six of them.
No.
You also wrote, so that's Stefani Prime, which is in
Lincolnwood.
Lincolnwood, which is not near Lincoln Park.
No, it's right. You know what? It's the TUI exit off the Edens Expressway. And that's where you're going to be. You're going to get off there. You're going to drive about a quarter mile south. And there you are.
What is your take on Taste of Chicago?
Well, it's an amazing success story. This is going to be the 38th Taste of Chicago when it shows up in July, and they still draw a million plus people. Right, a million and a half people and in 5 days. That ain't nothing.
So that's over at Grand Park still?
On Grand Park, right. They take over.
The very first one was on Michigan Avenue. Do you remember
that? The very first one was right here in 1980.
They closed off the streets.
On the 4th of July.
I know. There was tents and music, and we were all out there, and it was really fun and special. And I think the consensus, and maybe this is, I don't know, what do you think of this, is that it's run its course. That it's not as interesting, it's overpriced, there's long lines, there's... It's too crowded. I don't know. What is your thought about all that?
Well,
it's not special anymore.
I'd qualify that. I'd say yeah, those are valid arguments, and it's one thing that taste people should sit down every year and say, all right, how do we make this more interesting? One of the things they've done in the last few years, in addition to cutting it down to 5 days, which I think really helped, it became less of a chore for the restaurants who are participating. They also came up with the idea of the pop-up restaurants, where certain restaurant people can come in and just work for a day or two, and that's less of a strain on them because you have to staff the Taste of Chicago site, and you have to keep your restaurant open, so suddenly you need all these extra people. So that was helpful. And then inviting the food trucks. And now we're going to have something like 20-something food trucks on the Taste site as well, not all at the same time, but still... That gives people another option that they wouldn't have had.
July 11th through the 15th, so the week now after the 4th of July.
Right.
The 11th through the 15th in Grant Park, 38th Taste of Chicago with 26 first-time restaurants there.
Yeah.
Two James Beard winners.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. With Arun Sampathivivet, who has Arun's restaurant, won Best Chef. Actually, at the time, it was called Best Chef Midwest. Now we call it Great Lakes because we split the whatever. And he won Best Outstanding Chef for this region back in 2000. And
for what restaurant?
Arun's.
Arun's. Okay, so if you're walking around going, hey, there's Arun's, let's try that.
And he's there all 5 days, which is really nice.
And then Sun Hua Barbecue?
Right, that's up on that's up on Broadway. It was a recipient this year of, one of the recipients of James Beard Foundation's America's Classic Restaurants.
Eli's will be there, Lou Malnati's will be there, some of the ones you would expect will be there. Mm-hmm. Any others of the new ones maybe that you would recommend I make a point to search out while I go?
There was a place that was actually at the event when they made all these announcements, and it's called Chesa's. It's a gluten-free restaurant. They're based on the South Side. It's a woman runs it. Her name is Chesa, and she was doing some. She was passing out some a chicken dish and some other gluten-free little veggie thing that was really tasty.
Huh.
Had a little spark to it. So when Taste opens, that's going to be one of the first ones I hit.
Chesa's. It's a 148. Yeah, I can't ask you how they did this year. They haven't done it this year.
I've never been here before.
Phil Vitale's in our studio. Let's pause. Come back and answer the question that we were asking our listeners before the break.
Sure.
We were all talking about the rant that an attorney went on in a restaurant.
I saw that.
You saw that? Okay, what do you say about that in a minute? Man walked into a restaurant in New York. Everybody was speaking Spanish. He said this.
Your staff is speaking Spanish to customers when they should be speaking.
Being very violent. I mean, sometimes they do.
He spoke it. She's speaking it. It's America. I will be following up. And my guess is they're not documented. So my next call is to ICE that. Each one of them get out of my country. If they have the balls to come here and live off of my money, I pay for their welfare.
He says, my guess is they're undocumented. My next call is to ICE. And they said, well, go ahead and call ICE. And then he fat shamed them. And then he stormed out and everybody cheered. The point was, Phil, and I said this earlier, who should be speaking what language in the restaurant? We had different opinions about it. What do you think about this whole scene?
Well, if you walk into a restaurant and the person who's taking your order addresses you only in a language you don't speak, you probably have a gripe. If you're in a restaurant and two people are talking to themselves, not having anything to do with your business, but you notice they're speaking a language you don't understand, well, they weren't talking to you. That's not a problem. We go into ethnic restaurants all the time, and people in the back are talking in a different language.
Yeah,
it's efficient.
In this case, Fresh isn't an ethnic restaurant.
No.
It's a salad joint.
Right. It's a little bitty place, but I don't get that. I do not understand the source of that anger. This guy's an attorney. He's obviously making a fair amount of money. He's got a place in Manhattan, whatever, and he needs to pick on counter servers. It's appalling.
He is a self-employed attorney.
Mm-hmm, not
and,
for long.
Yeah, that's it. I said he's going to get fired. Well, he's not going to get fired. He works for himself. But I don't think this helps his business much. Maybe it does. He's a relatively young man, fit, good-looking, well-dressed guy who just went on a tirade.
Yeah. I mean, by all real accounts, he's probably... The world is treating him fairly well right now. You know, he's
so what? What's your point?
So why is he angry? At whom is he angry? First, he tells them he's undocumented, and then he says he pays for their welfare. Well, which is it? Because if you're undocumented, you don't get welfare.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You don't.
That's true.
So you're not paying anything for them if they're undocumented.
But one of us, when we were talking about it earlier, said this, that the staff, if the customer base is predominantly English-speaking, even to themselves, should speak English, because maybe some of the clientele will be uncomfortable if they see these people speaking in a language they don't speak. Your thoughts?
I don't buy that at all.
Yeah.
I don't see that. I don't see how a foreign language is. I hear too many foreign languages, and I'm thinking, boy, I really am stupid. I never learned another language. Instead of snapping my fingers and saying, excuse me, but you should be... Now, if they're saying something in a different language while they're pointing at me and suppressing giggles, I have a gripe.
Different animal.
Right.
From 630 area code, hey, John, this guy, the attorney in the video whose audio you just heard, should never go to a nail salon. By the way, 847 said, just looked up Stefani Prime on Google Maps. It is south of Tui on Google Maps, not north of Tui.
Did I say north?
If you did, then make sure you go south.
Yeah.
Off of the Edens. Phil Stefani's new place, Stefani Prime.
Yeah. Hang a right at Cicero.
Where are you eating tonight?
I haven't made plans for tonight yet. I'm going to see what the day brings me.
Well, you haven't made reservations for anywhere?
Not yet, no.
You know where we kind of like to go? We were there the other night. My son and his wife and my other son and Brenda and I went to Cara Mio, which is an Italian place near Ravenswood. It's one of those BYO wine places, too, which is kind of nice.
Very nice.
Because you save money on the bill. You get the wine you want. You get as much as you want. And Cara Mio, we like that place pretty well.
Nice.
There's a shout out to them from me. Hey, John, go ahead, Phil.
My favorite thing at BYO restaurants, and it happens from time to time, they have been trained so well in wine service that when they open my wine for me and begin to pour it in the glass, they pour a sample.
I know. What, are you going to spit it out and go, no, take it back?
Oh, wait. I so wanted to do like a Three Stooges spit take and just like, oh, my.
Somebody do that and report back to us. I want to know how that plays out.
Video or it didn't
happen.
You
spit it out, they take it back, and then a minute later they go, sir, you brought this.
That's right, yeah.
You're an idiot.
I've got ginger ale for you.
All right, I'm out of time. Phil, it's always a pleasure to read you see you. Thanks for coming into our studio. You can read Phil Vitale in the print editions of the Chicago Tribune or online at chicagotribune.com/dining. Will you join us next week?
I will.
Hey, when you go to The Taste, maybe I should come along.
Hey, that could be fun.
Wouldn't that be kind of fun?
Yeah.
Violetta, you should bring your video equipment and we'll make a... can we make a video or how do you feel about that?
We'll see. Well, I've done them before and what we usually do is...
Because I know you need to be anonymous.
Right. They put the camera at ground level.
Here's
and
Phil's
I get
feet.
A yeah, I get a you get a you get a cankle-eyed view of Taste of Chicago with my voice somehow audible.
Well, you can show us everything and we'll taste it on camera.
Yeah, that's what it is. You need some faces in this. God bless your ankles.
I'm sure
they're lovely.
You guys just invite yourself to Phil's party? Is that what just happened?
Yes.
Yeah,
and are you trying to get invited now?
It sounds like it.
All right, nice to see you, Phil.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
every day.
Here's John Williams.
Thanks, Steve. And hi, it's John. It's 209. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We're here weekdays until 3, and then Lord have mercy, Roe Khan comes in. He'll be upset about something. I promise it'll be good. Anna DeVlantis and the gang. I'm on Saturdays, too, from 10 a.m. till noon. And on social media, it's WGN King John. Look for me at WGN King John on the Twitter and Instagram. Like me on Facebook, too. You've been reading the Chicago Sun-Times lately. They've been doing a series of articles and posts, and they've been involved in a number of ways in something called the 31 bullets. We talked the other day about that display that looked like a divvy rack over by the Daily Center. And instead of bicycles in the rack, they were all AR-15s. A bunch of assault rifles were there. It was a gun share program. They weren't really guns, but boy, it looked like it. And it sure did give you pause. That display was not in Chicago long enough. But the Sun-Times ain't done with it yet because they're the ones that are working on this 31 bullets campaign. Tom McNamee is the editorial page editor over there, and he's in our studio. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for inviting us on.
Why is it called 31 Bullets?
Well, that's a great the most obvious question we get all the time. There are, every year in this country, about 10 billion bullets are sold. Now, not all sold to bad guys and good. They're sold to the military. They're sold to police officers. They're sold to the old lady who's just trying to protect her home with a little handgun. And they're also sold to the bad guys, you know, the armed robbers and the thugs. But every year in our country, we sell about 10 billion bullets. If you divide that number by the number of people in this country, you get 31 bullets for every man, woman, and child.
It's a lot of bullets.
Yeah, that's how, I think that's what struck us. That was a pretty good name for a campaign because that's a lot of bullets.
So what caused you, so this, the people we had on the other day were from the Brady Center.
Right.
That was their work of art, right?
What's that?
That was their work of art that they displayed.
I believe so. And you know, it's funny. I never saw it. I didn't even know it was coming.
I didn't either. Well, I read about it in your newspaper, but I thought, I told the woman that was involved in the project, I said, you should have kept that here longer. She said, unfortunately, there's other cities that are dealing with this issue, and so on the artwork goes. But
it's really compelling. Sad, because I've never seen someone that symbolized something that symbolized the issue so well as that piece of artwork, how easy it is to get a gun in this country.
Yeah.
It's like a divvy bike.
I know. Although you can imagine, plenty of people texted me right after she was on and said, it's not that easy. It's not that easy in Chicago. It's not that easy in Illinois.
And they're right.
And so that analogy doesn't work. So there's always going to be critics of this. What's been the reception of the 31 Bullets campaign?
You know, it's been really good. It's been remarkably good. I think people like the idea of putting a label on it, being consistent. We've been writing about guns and the need to have saner gun laws for as long as I've been editorial page editor, which is 10 years. And it's always like you write an editorial when this kid gets killed. You write an editorial when six kids are killed over there. And it's just horrendous. And the idea that you could systematically, more of a systematic way, address this issue, at least for the next month or two, it's fantastic. I mean, that's what you get in the business for.
What's the bottom line? What is the message? Is it saner gun laws or we need to eliminate guns entirely? What are you guys saying?
I'm so glad you asked that because the biggest criticism of this campaign or any such campaign is from people who try to pretend it's a black and white issue, that you either are anti-guns or you want every gun in the world to be on the street and every six-year-old can have one. And the reality is every one of these 31 bullets, what these are, by the way, is 31 things that can be done to create saner gun laws.
Think bullet points almost.
These are bullet points, 31 of them. And every one of them, none of them is a threat to the existence of the Second Amendment. They're all sort of kind of sane things you want to do. Like, for instance, have a lock on a gun when you store it away so that if your six-year-old's at home and you're not, the kid's not going to take it down and accidentally fire it. Now, I think that's something we can do in this country without violating the Second Amendment.
Did you guys take a position on bump stocks?
Yeah. Our position is that's a bad idea. That's actually a very easy one. Even the NRA
really?
Has taken that one. I mean, they aren't. I mean, If you're a super pro gun person and you're looking for something you can say you're on board with in terms of saner gun laws, you go to bump stocks. That's not too tough.
What do you make of? But in fact, what's the federal position on bump stocks? They're not illegal in the United States, are they?
They're not illegal yet, and I think there was an effort to have legislation to make them illegal. The NRA believes that regulatory means can limit the sale of bump stocks without having to have a law that explicitly prohibits them.
You know, I'm a quote-unquote anti-gun guy, but I think the NRA would be surprised how far down the road I would meet them if they would get on the same road as me. My criticism, and of course we all come at it from our own position, but my criticism is that they're not interested in the gun conversation at all because they're afraid they'll have to give up too much, and I don't think I would be unreasonable about it. I think the Second Amendment has a place. I don't think bump stocks or machine guns do. I'm not a fan of assault-style rifles, and so we'll have to figure that out. But I don't think they're even interested in the conversation with me.
No, they're not. They're not. But the NRA does not speak for everybody in this country, and I don't think it even speaks for the majority of people who believe that guns are a Second Amendment right. So what we're trying to... This is a really important thing. On an editorial page, you don't talk to the extremists, and you look for the people who can meet you in the middle. And a good editorial page doesn't just preach to the choir. I try it with our editorial page to find positions we can bring people over, and you can find that middle ground that you just described. And I think that's what we're trying to do here.
What's happened to the NRA over the years?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they've become more extreme or we just more noticed that. I really don't know. But they're very, very militant about any possible change. You know, the good example is there is an effort now in Illinois to try to have a law that says if somebody in your family seems to be in a emotionally dangerous state, where they could be a danger to themselves, suicide, or a danger to others, family should be able to go to court and ask the judge for a warrant that would allow officials to take guns away from that family member. So maybe you've got a brother who's kind of off on his own and he's getting scarier and scarier. Frankly, the Lori Dan, the killing, was 30 years ago this Sunday.
Yeah, right.
And she had a lot of guns that she should not have had. She had a long, strong history of mental illness. And we had that kind of a law, she might not have been armed. That doesn't strike me as extreme.
Here's a couple of texts. 31 bullets is a lot. That's not even 2 minutes at the range. From 847, I buy 1,000 bullets at a time. We use them at the range. You liberals don't understand guns. 1,000 rounds go quick for fun. From 312, John, the marketing on that art was around the Indiana gun laws, not Illinois. And from 847, we only think you're after all guns because to a man, all anti-gunners get flustered and say, well, why do you need any guns anyways? Just a few of our texts.
Well, you know, if people who want to make the argument that we should have no changes in our gun laws want to quote the most extreme people on the left, they can do that. But I am not one of those people, and neither are you. The truth is the vast majority of people in the Chicago and the suburbs and America want to get incremental change that will keep us safer, keep our children safer, and make us a saner society. They do not want to take away everybody's gun.
Right, but I think the NRA feels, this is just my interpretation of them, that if they even begin to engage in that, they need to be resistant to the conversation itself. Because once they engage, now they're having a conversation about limiting gun owners' rights, and they don't want to do that.
Right.
And I know I'm repeating myself, but I think if we had that conversation, they might be surprised how much ground we'd give.
Absolutely.
On the other side.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's anybody. In fact, when we talk about this all the time, about do we support a particular gun law, some change, a reform, and I always say the same thing. Let's make sure people understand that we're not trying to take guns away from the homeowner who has a handgun and they, you know, they live in a tough neighborhood and they simply need it to feel safe. We get that, right? And we get the Wisconsin hunter who wants to hunt. Even the target people, I don't care, okay? But somewhere beyond that, for instance, an AR-15 semi-assault weapon, I simply don't buy the argument that there's a useful purpose that justifies its sale in this country. And frankly, there is no. I mean, they'll say, well, we like to use it for target shooting or things like that. But I think most reasonable people, maybe not the folks defending AR-15s, would say that the arguments against that kind of a military weapon in our streets are so much stronger than the arguments that I should be able to use an AR-15 so I can have target practice.
You and I were talking off the air, and you told me a story about some kids and what they were saying about this issue. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Okay, tell that story in a minute. It's 219. This is WGN. Tom McNamee is the editorial page editor of the Chicago Sun-Times. You may remember when he did a much-loved radio show on WLS.
Yeah, I reminded you of that, huh?
I said, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, sure you do. It was Hayner and McNamee on. It was Saturday mornings for a while.
So what about what you heard a young person say about this 31 bullets issue?
It wasn't me. Actually, what happened was we're working with the communications advertising agency, Ogilvy & Mather, here in Chicago.
Sure.
And there's a fellow over there named Joe who's involved in this project. We're their client, and they're helping with the artwork and the social media. They're really good. And I asked Joe, why are you so passionate about this project? And he said, it's like this. I have a kid, and he's high school age. And you know, all of these high school kids have been doing these walkouts, right? Right after
Parkland.
And his son, he asked his son one day, are you going to do the walkout tomorrow at your school? And his son, no, I don't think so. And he said, why not? He said, because I don't know why I'm walking out. And Joe said, it made a lot of sense. Because especially at that age, it's so easy to just do it sort of an emotional impulse. I grew up in Chicago. I went to Bogan High School on 79th Street, right? Graduated in 1972. And in about 1971, we had a walkout. I don't even remember what it was about, John. And I don't think I knew what it was about even then. It was the thing to do.
Not that you forgot, but you were just a follower.
Yeah, I was just a follower. And when Joe told me the story about his son, it resonated. I said, you know, I think these young people are looking for understanding about what the issues really are.
So that's what the 31 bullets issue is.
And that's why it's done with social media, with these very contained, concise explanations of each stand.
And I don't think this stuff is inflammatory. Like today, the cover wrap on the Chicago Sun-Times is about smartly storing and keeping a gun.
Right.
It's not saying don't have guns.
No, not at all. No, I mean, to that particular point, that's the what we're looking for is what they do in Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, if you sell a gun, anybody who sells a gun, a dealer, a guy at a garage sale, you have to sell with that gun a trigger lock, a little lock you put on the gun so it can't be fired unless you have a key or something. And in Massachusetts, by law, if you store your gun, if it's not with you in the same room, you have to have that lock on it so it's up in a closet in your way for obvious reasons. In Illinois, we have a trigger lock requirement for dealers. If you go to a gun shop and buy a gun, then you sell it, but not for anybody else, not for gun shows like the one they're having.
You don't think that's too invasive? Maybe in my own home, I should be able to keep the gun however I want, wherever I want.
Well, that's, you know what? And this goes back to your point. I kind of would think that maybe I would push for a lock in all those storage cases. But I also get the argument that says,
what's want it in the drawer in the other room.
What's the point of a gun if I can't use it when a bad guy comes to the door?
I'm not so sure I love this law.
So maybe this goes back to your point. Maybe this is where you compromise. Maybe you require a trigger lock for every single gun sale, which we do not have in Illinois. But I and the other side say, I'll give up on the part that you lock it up when it's in your own home.
But I'll at least mandate that you have access to that. Nobody will be able to say, but I didn't have a lock.
Right.
And the kids got to it. Lots of texts about this. Some of them agree absolutely with what you're saying, and some of them are saying that you should pound sand. So,
yeah, well, so does a lot of my family. But
so I got to go, but does this run 31 days then, too, or what's
31
the time?
Days, we roll out the bullets. Every day you see what you see in front of you, a full page highlighting of one of the 31 bullet points. And each week, at least one good editorial. But frankly, I kind of hope we continue to do this straight through the summer as much as we can.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Chicago needs that message in the summers, typically. Hey, John, why don't we put a big tax on bullets, said somebody. The late, great Senator Paul Simon said we should do that in Illinois. I don't know what the attitude about that is in the legislature, but you got downstaters that probably ain't loving this campaign.
Yeah, actually, where there are taxes on bullets, it seems to be somewhat effective in reducing the use of guns. I was talking to a guy down in New Orleans who said that's a huge issue, trying to limit the sale of ammunition. The issue is not whether there's a tax on bullets. The issue is whether or not you regulate the sale of bullets the way you regulate the sale of guns. So you have to have an age requirement, and you have to have a FOIA card, the firearms,
right.
Those kinds of deals. And I think that's a reasonable thing.
Tom McNamee, editorial page editor, Chicago Sun-Times. Well, good luck to you guys, and let's keep talking about this.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks a lot, John.
Keep writing about this, Tom. There was just such a touching story on TV the other night, the local news. I don't remember what channel it was, and I saw it in the Tribune, too, about this 7.5-year-old Eastern black rhinoceros that's at the Brookfield Zoo. And like many of us, it has dental issues. Never throw candy to a rhino. They get cavities. They notoriously don't floss or brush well. And so this rhinoceros is uncomfortable, and they wanted to help it. So they had like 40 members of the staff, because the thing weighs like 100 million pounds. And they had to anesthetize it and then kind of roll it over. And, roll it over gently so it doesn't get hurt. So how do you do that? Well, you got to get 40 people to do it. And then they put it in the shovel of a front end loader, like a Caterpillar tractor, and it picks it up, beep, 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 and then drops it onto a thing. And the next thing you know, they're putting it in one of those CAT scan machines, where you go in and they look at your head or your body or whatever they're taking the rays of, Cochrane asked this morning if they put little headphones on it so that he could hear the music that he wanted, which led to the question, well, then I wonder what music the animal would want to listen to, but we didn't have a good punchline at the time. So anyway, on a phone line is Dr. Michael Atkison, who is the Vice President of Clinical Medicine with the Chicago Zoological Society, and he joins us now on WGN Radio. Doctor, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Was that a fair description of what happened, at least up to that point?
That was a very good description, yeah. Yeah, excellent.
And what was the rhino actually suffering from? Was it like cavities or some other issue in the nasal cavity? What was going on there?
Yeah, so the first signs that we started noticing with Layla was that she was having difficulty breathing. Rhinos are an exclusive nasal breather, so they have a very... it's very unnatural for them to be breathing through their mouth, and that was one of the things that our care staff started noticing, was that Layla was really struggling to move air normally through her nose. Huh. And that was what led us down the pathway of trying to understand what was going on and what was blocking her sinus.
I understand there were three surgical procedures as well as that scan. What was bothering her, and did you all get it? Did you fix it?
Yeah, so the CT scan allowed us to really pin this down to an unerupted molar. So if you think of an impacted wisdom tooth, basically, is what we're talking about here. And that unerupted tooth had become infected. And as that infection spread, the abnormal tissue had begun to block off her nasal passageways and was making it very difficult for her to breathe.
Human beings get impacted molars, right? And then they can get infected. So it was akin to that. How big is a molar on a rhino?
About 2 inches, 2 inches square. So they're pretty good sized teeth.
Yeah, right, sure. So then what do you do?
So at that point, we went in surgically to basically break that tooth apart and remove the tooth, as well as try and clear out this infected tissue that had built up within her sinuses. No easy task by any means. You're talking about a very large head with very thick, dense bones, as well as very thick skin. So it's a really difficult surgical approach for us to make. And this was obviously in a very tight location in the back of her mouth, where we could not get a good approach through the oral cavity. It's right behind her eye, basically. So we're dealing with a lot of sensitive tissues and nerves and vasculature that we don't want to disrupt.
So you got to prop the mouth, I guess, way open as much as you can and then get in there, huh?
Yeah, so our approach actually ended up coming through the top of her head down into her sinuses. So we made a pair of surgical incisions in the top of her skull that allowed us access into that sinus to remove the infected tissue. And from there, we actually are able to push the tooth from the top down and push the tooth down into the mouth where we could get it out.
Now, that's a good idea, or at least it sounds like one. Is that the standard treatment for impacted molars on rhinoceroses?
It is now. This is the first one that we know of that's ever been dealt with. This was the first CT scan ever done on a rhino. We've now done it twice, so that's really provided us a tremendous amount of information to develop this treatment plan. A ton of teamwork involved in this case. We had veterinary consultants from the University of Georgia, the vet school at North Carolina State University that are surgical specialists and dental specialists that have some experience with rhinos in the past, as well as local equine surgeon here in the Chicagoland area that helped us to basically plan this surgery and figure out our approach based on the data off of the CT scan.
So then who did the surgery? Who did the cutting?
So it's a team effort. All of those folks I just mentioned, as well as our team of veterinarians here at the zoo, really was a huge team effort to make this possible.
Boy, are you nervous when you do something like that? Because it just seems to me, I don't know what the numbers are of rhinos. I don't suppose this particular species is endangered. They didn't mention it. But yet I find those creatures to be so precious that I would hate to do anything wrong, you know?
That is exactly right. All species of rhinos are really in a terrible place right now. Poaching has really devastated the numbers that are still found in the wild. Eastern black rhinoceros, which is what Layla is, facing a real extinction crisis where the numbers in the wild have really just plummeted. And Layla's a young animal, so she's got the opportunity to potentially contribute a number of calves to the global population. And that's really something that we hope we can pull her through and allow that to happen. She's a very special animal for all of us here at the zoo, too, one that everybody's very attached to. And it's always a little bit of a stressful situation anytime you're working on any of our animals here at the zoo, both because they're endangered as well as they're part of our family here at the zoo, and we always want what's best for them.
Layla, female, do you have a male rhinoceros? Are you guys breeding rhinoceroses or rhinoceri?
We do. We have two males here at the zoo, Nikhili and King. King was born at Lincoln Park Zoo. Nikhili's been with us here for quite some time, and Layla would definitely be in a situation where she would be breeding with one of those guys if we're able to get her through this situation and get her back to good health.
So what's the prognosis on this surgery? I mean, how do you think she did?
The surgery went well. We were able to get a tremendous amount of the abnormal tissue out. We've still got a road ahead of us for sure. We're managing two surgical wounds at this point to get those to heal up, and we know we still have some infected tissue left in there that we're not able to surgically remove, so we're working to medically manage that at this point.
You're giving her antibiotics for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great big antibiotics. Talk about horse pills. These are rhino pills.
Yes. It's always it's a large amount of medication anytime we're working with one of these guys.
Yeah, we find that we put the medicine in little pill pockets, and our dogs just snap them up. I don't know how you give them to. Is it an IV hookup for this rhinoceros?
It's a little bit of both. We do intravenous antibiotics. In Layla's case, we've done some of that. She's actually got a catheter in place in one of the veins in her ear right now, so we're able to access that catheter to give treatments through it. She's obviously got to be cooperative in that, so she's got a great relationship with our care staff, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to use that catheter voluntarily to administer some of these treatments. And then we also, very similar to the pill pockets you just mentioned, our staff gets very creative in hiding some of the medications with our animals here at the zoo.
We put a pill of medicine or something in my dog's dish sometimes. I've had a few, and among them, some of them would, you know, they would eat everything in that bowl, and there'd be a tiny little white pill just waiting for you.
Yep, Yep, we run into that same thing all the time. The incredible sense of smell of animals is never working in our favor.
Man alive. Okay, so I'll let you go here. Dr. Michael Atkinson's on the line, the Vice President of Clinical Medicine with the Chicago Zoological Society. We're talking about this 7.5-year-old Layla, the rhinoceros. First time ever they've done something like this anywhere. So props to you all. But I also heard that this might be the sort of condition that a rhinoceros would not survive in the wild. Is this rhinoceros going to live? Is she in pain? Is she conscious all the time now? What's going on?
Yeah, we're very hopeful that we're going to be able to pull her through this. If she were in the wild, this is a situation that she would not have been able to survive. This infection would have blocked off her ability to breathe normally or ability to really have any sort of strenuous activity, and I'm very confident this is not something that she could have lived with. With the interventions that we've done to date, we have her very comfortable at this point. She's breathing well. Seeming to be very content with her situation at the moment. We do have her on pain medications post-surgically there to keep her comfortable, and right now she's doing well. So we're hopeful we'll be able to get her through this, but we definitely have a road ahead of us in terms of getting this completely cleared up.
Hmm. Are there visiting hours? I could pick up a gift. I don't know what I would give her.
We actually have her not in a state where you can see her right now, just to keep her in kind of a quiet, calm area. Mm-hmm. It's obviously start of summertime here, so our crowds are picking up, and we're just trying to keep her in a quiet area.
I don't want to ask an indelicate question, but does she have insurance, and what's this going
She has fantastic medical care, probably better than you or I do. All of our animals here at the zoo are on a very robust preventative health care program, so they all get regular checkups, and we really provide the highest quality medical care for everybody here at no cost to the patient.
Seriously, did anybody put a number to it?
You know, we don't, actually. We just do what we need to do.
Yeah. Well, good for you for doing it. We're all cheering for you and for Layla, and it's fascinating and innovative. Lucky us, we've got those kind of people in the Chicagoland area. Thanks for visiting with us, and our best to your team, Doctor.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Michael Atkinson is with the Chicago Zoological Society out at Brookfield. They've got that rhino.
Got me on my knees.
And the rhino opens up her mail in a couple of months. Molar extraction, $9 million. Thanks a lot, Obama. Our best to Layla and all of the good people over there in the Chicago Zoological Society and in Brookfield at the zoo. I was watching the last couple of episodes of New Girl with Zooey Deschanel. Love that show.
Oh, so funny.
Isn't she the best? And, you know, I don't love that show as much now as I used to, but the first season it came out, I just thought it was the funniest, dorkiest, silliest show. I read a review of it in, where was it, the New York Times or somewhere the other day, and they said that when New Girl came out, so many of the comedies were smart and sarcastic and had an edge to them, and then this goofy girl comes in and she's going to live with some guys in a loft or in an apartment. You know, that's the setup for the new girl that's with them. And it was just so silly and funny, and her physical comedy and the writing and everything, I just thought was hilarious. And I never thought, how is it different than other shows I like? And why do I like it so much? But I really did, and I really do. Zooey Deschanel.
It's easy comedy.
It really is. And, you know, nobody gets in fights afterwards. It would be the opposite of the reboot of Roseanne, just as a for instance. Or they said Community and what were the other ones that they were comparing it to? But anyway, it was just they said that you didn't know it at the time, but it was sort of a different kind of comedy, and one that maybe we actually needed then. And when it first came out, they go, oh, this is too stupid. It's too silly. Turns out it wasn't, and it was probably the right show at the right time in the right place.
There are small qualities on that show, like Jake Johnson's character. He does this moonwalk out of the room when he feels awkward, and it just makes you feel like it's so easy to resonate with.
There are little things they'll do on that show. Small qualities, is that how you put it?
Small things that just crack you up because you can relate so well.
Or that are just so stupid, so silly, so ridiculous and funny. Some of the things they say or the way they say them are just hilarious.
But then it's also like a sitcom family where they come together at the end.
Always. Always.
So you're like, yay!
I mean, really. So I'm watching the show, and I always love the clothes that Winston wears. He has the coolest shirts. And he had on this one of the last two episodes a jacket over a shirt. It's kind of a brownish, had a print on the shirt, and then some action going on the jacket. And boy, was he pulling it off. And I thought, I would love to have either or both of those. So I Googled Winston's clothes on New Girl. And suddenly it directs me to a website called WornOnTV.net. Technically, if you type in com, it'll just link you right to it. WornOnTV. So I go there now, and I type in, you just type in your show, and then the characters pop up. And then you click on the character that you want to dress like. And then there's Winston's clothes. And you click on the shirt that he's wearing in a screen grab from an episode, and it takes you to Nordstrom's or to whatever the company is that sells them. Those clothes weren't designer made for the episode. They're buying them off the rack. So now I'm like, hey, I'm going to get the striped wool bomber jacket.
I was just going to say bomber jacket and bird shirt.
I know I'm not going to get that now because but it works. I mean, but it works the way he does it. I don't know if it would look good on me. That's
the bomber
jacket thing.
Would. I don't know about them.
I know. Maybe I'm too old or too square or too, you know, maybe I'm not the guy for those clothes, but I want them. And now the other thing that's happening, of course, is anywhere I go on the internet now, I'm getting colorful shirts like Winston would wear. Everywhere I go, I just see pop-up ads and page takeovers for these shirts. But it's kind of cool. So there's a little heads up for you. If there's somebody whose clothes you like on TV, just go to WornOnTV, and there it is. Ro, do you know the NMLS ID number for Team Hochberg?
19186.
13663.
19186.
You really?
It is 19186.
Oh, I'm getting it mixed up with the other one.
Boy, that's a book on your shelf that now isn't on there because you've got that information. Mm-hmm. Don't you wish you could take that out and then put
it
in?
It doesn't work like that. A lot
who's
of
the
26th stuff.
Vice President or something? Because
yeah, no, I know it. It just is what it is. I mean, you know, you never know when someone's going to ask me what David Hochberg's NMLS number is, and I will be able to tell them.
And what will you tell them?
19186.
When I get to be king, we're not going to have to do that disclaimer.
No,
so
that
nobody's going, aha, but I'll bet he doesn't have an NMLS ID number.
And I'm going to go look it up right now.
No, don't worry.
And then what am I going to do
with
that?
Don't worry. The new banking czars in America will make sure that we don't have to have any kind of rules or regulations around this.
What are you kids talking about today?
The Congressman Adam Kinzinger is going to join us right off the top here. He's got his own thoughts about that Chinese telecom company and what the White House is doing there. And also, what does all this really mean in terms of North Korea? And what does all of this really mean in terms of the Mueller investigation as we celebrate the one-year anniversary of it with a very snarky tweet from the President of the United States?
What did he say? Happy birthday or happy anniversary?
It was
witch hunt, I think, was used.
Yeah.
By the way, the greatest witch hunt ever was the witch hunts in Salem, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Nobody's been burned to the stake here.
No.
I get it. It's a metaphor, but I think you could even say the Red Scare. You could say McCarthyism was a witch hunt. Is this the great? There's only one witch here.
You're saying you're disgusting, illegal, unwarranted witch hunt.
The only problem with that is that 72 criminal charges have been already let in this. It's not like they're searching around for something. They already have it.
So we've got 72 witches already.
72 counts. And so the question is how many... how high does this go? I mean, is he telling us that Manafort is completely clean here? If he'd like to tell, he should just then say he's going to pardon all these guys. If it's a total witch hunt, he should just say he's going to pardon them and see where that gets him.
So Adam Kinzinger is going to join you?
He will. Right.
Tom Skilling is going to be here. Turns out that I just learned something about Tom Skilling.
Really?
That we're going to be discussing.
So many layers to Tom Skilling.
Yeah.
You know?
That I learned that he has an interest, a very specific interest,
yeah,
that I'm sort of surprised by. And we will investigate that with him coming up at when we talk to him at 3:40.
A hobby or a skill?
It's an interest. It's an interest.
Tightrope walking?
It's an interest. And
can we guess?
Classic
radio tease.
I would not have guessed this interest. And at 3:40, we will unveil it.
Oh, I'm hooked.
All right. Okay.
What time is that?
That's at 3:40, and Lester Holt will be here, and Lori Lightfoot in the 4 o'clock hour. And then Ron Majors joins us at 6 o'clock, tells us who's going to win the Preakness. He, by the way, gave us a $19,000 superfecta when he was here for the Kentucky Derby.
He got it right?
Yeah.
If I had taken that, I would have made $19,000?
On a $1 bet, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Did anybody do that? Did he say that on the radio?
Kev?
Did you do it, Kev?
Hold on a second. Let me turn Kev up. Hey, Kev.
Yeah, I'm here. Yes, that is correct. I made me some dough as well.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Did you make $19,000?
No, not that much.
I was going to say, you'd better be taking us to dinner if you want $19,000.
Mm-hmm. Just listen. I would just recommend that you listen to what Roe and them have to say today. they're kind of on top of this whole start of the horse racing season.
Yeah. Between Eddie O and...
Have a good show.